Let's see what we can talk about tonight. There are all kinds of very practical, common sayings like find a penny, pick it up, all the day you'll have good luck, or penny saved is a penny earned. Also, I had a friend who liked to go to karate camp in the summer times, and she used to have to save her money. Now, this is like going back to when people really bought things with cash. So she would, at the end of the day, collect up her spare change, and she'd put it in a piggy bank. So slowly, slowly, she would get up enough money to go to karate camp in the summer. Oh, from the Dhammapada, we have also, Buddha also is on this line. Drop by drop, the pot is filled with water, right? Wholesome things, drop by drop, you'll fill it up. It goes also for the unwholesome things, but we're not going to talk so much about that. So there's a practical wisdom in giving, seeing the value and potential, what is there, in things which are normally valueless because they're so of such small currency. Even I notice nowadays, like I lived in Asia until the summer of 2006, so sometimes I still feel like a newcomer back in America. And I notice nowadays people don't pick up pennies from the street. They just let them be there. I just don't understand what that's about. In India, you wouldn't find anything of value, even a banana peel, be left on the street, right? Because people have got, you know, something they would do with it. Anyway, so for picking up pennies. So this is a practice of recollection. A practice, I'm going to transit now from just talking about the pot that gets filled up drop by drop to how you end your days, you know, day by day. You finished brushing your teeth, you're going to go to bed. Have a moment of recollecting your day. Your many pennies of value are in that day. And if you don't give attention and energy to them, you don't get any revenue coming from them, right? They just go scattering. Like I give you an example. Today, Andrea was driving me around. And we're coming through some traffic, and then suddenly this car came out. Well, that car nearly hit us. But she was very cool about it. I hope you don't mind I'm telling an Andrea story. Some people would really kill me for this, but and she's a very mature practitioner, I can tell. So there's a kind of coolness there, non-reactivity. Also, I mean, I turned my head because it's coming in the passenger side. It's hard not to take it a little personally. But the woman who was driving the other car, she also had a look on her face of intense regret. Now, there are a couple of things to be said about this. So in that moment, everybody let go of it. There wasn't any damage done, right? And so then there was this moment of letting go. That letting go moment is a moment of Dharma practice, right? Now, and it's right, there, you know, the Buddhist nun is going to come in from the airport. You're not going to send somebody who's prone to road rage, right? Maybe you should. But anyway, this is what I just am pointing out. You have a lot of moments in the day in which maybe spontaneously, in this case it seemed to be very spontaneous, you just let go of something because you see nothing happened and there's nothing to carry in terms of cursing or rage or anything like that, so there's dropping it. That's a moment of letting go, right? There's a little decision in there. Am I going to consolidate resistance and anger and proliferate in a story about this? Which some people do, right? But so you're a Dharma practitioner and you have a moment of letting go. Okay, different scenario. Supposing somebody cuts you off in traffic and you do feel really mad about it. But you work with it. and you work with it, and you work with it, and slowly, slowly, you let it go. That's also a very good one to recollect at the end of the day. That's a, like a penny that's got a lot of currency potential and return value for your Dharma practice. This is the practice of mindfully recollecting the seemingly insignificant moments in which your Dharma practice is happening in daily life. Or you have the literature comes in the post. This time of year, everybody wants some of your kindness and generosity, isn't it? This is the season in which all charities send out their mailings. So you get something in the post, and your initial impression is that you favor them. You feel happy about whatever this organization is doing, and you feel inclined for generosity. You know, maybe you haven't actually given yet, or even you haven't actually decided that you are going to give, but it comes up in your mind. I feel inclined. That's also a moment of currency. It's a rising of generosity in your continuum, in your mind, in your heart. So letting go of anger or moment of inclination to generosity, or you're standing in the grocery line and the line is, you know, there's somebody, something's going on in that grocery line that's making it long and wearisome. And maybe the people themselves are a little bit testy. Again, I'm onto these negative ones, but anyway, you have a moment of just not making anything of it. A little bit, you know, your intention may be insightful, but it's not worth it. It will just wear you out. But maybe it's also just your character and you don't even think one way or another. You don't realize your decision-making is operating and you just don't get excited or upset about it. Or, let me think of other kinds of very ordinary examples that happen during the day. Oh, you're obsessing about something. And then you realize there's no benefit to going on and on like this. I can't solve it by pulling at it more and more. So let me do something different. Let me go sweep the front stairs. So you're doing something that's really quite different, but still it's applying an antidote. Skillful one. You're applying a skillful mind state to dislodge some intractable, troublesome one. That's good. Lots and lots of these. If I get you started, you yourselves will start to review that you have many moments of, oh, an ethical discipline, sila. There are moments in which it may happen that somebody has, like I do the shopping for my household. And I was in the co-op, and there was an announcement that came over the loudspeker that somebody dropped their $20 bill. And did any of the shoppers find that $20 bill? Seattle is so righteous a place. You know, they in no time at all, they had to make an announcement that they got the $20 bill. I mean, maybe everybody's actually on their hands and knees looking to find it and not deciding what they'll do. But actually, it's a co-op, so you would expect people are going to be card-carrying virtuous people to come shop at the co-op. Okay, so a moment in which something is lost, and there's a little thing that it's whatever has gone out of the control of the owner, it's attractive to you, and you also feel impulsive toward it. And you catch that. There's some intervening moment which says, maybe the owner would be happy to have it back. So like we're looking at all these various moments. Or moments in which you hold your tongue from making some catty comment or complaining or something like this. All little moments that go on. Your whole day is just a stream of these kinds of things in like alternation. And you don't pay any attention to it because maybe you've got the idea that your meditation is only happening when you like get the cushion and you fold the legs and you, you know, secure it by closing the eyes, and you, no, that's the meditation. And so you're only looking to see what are your moments of mindfulness in your meditation itself, right? So you lose all the ability to take advantage of all of those naturally arising moments in which you make wholesome decisions, or in which wholesome mental states arise. Even you may have some moment of mindfulness, you know, in which you're aware of your bodily movements, as your general coordination as you're going down the street, or you're in your yoga class or something like that. Okay, why am I going on and on about this? Drop by drop, you know, the pot is going to get filled. So at the end of the day, you take your quiet moment before you put yourself to bed, and you scan back what were the highlights of the day. Give attention to those moments which you are habitually overriding their importance. Give attention to them. Learn to identify them. This is another practice of perception and mindfulness. You think mindfulness is only bearing in mind the present moment. Mindfulness is bearing in mind many things, what you need to know, and collecting them, and being able to review and work them over in your mind. This is also a practice of mindfulness, contemplation, anupassana. So you go through your day. Oh, there was that moment when I didn't get upset about the car. I let it go completely. There was the moment of this, there was a moment of that, there was a moment of another thing. And then, okay, so then the things which are, now when you become accustomed to paying attention to it, you'll be able to enhance it with your attention and recognition and calling it back to mind. And you'll, because you call it to mind, you'll be able to observe what is wholesome in that. What are the, like, also, what are the characteristics of wholesome mental states? You will come to get your field guide to wholesome mental states very well detailed. I promise. Okay, so you, and then you have it in mind. That person, they did that strange driving maneuver, and I so spontaneously let it go. Then you contemplate then that quality of letting something go completely. You let your mind identify that and rest with that, explore that a little bit. It's like a mind, my preceptor, oh, what a great monk he was. Really great yogi, and this, and it was in a way, it's really a blessing for me that he had maybe only 6 Dharma talks that he ever gave. You know, if it's Tuesday night, it must be the Dharma talk on mind and matter, and if it's Wednesday, it's this one, like that. But it was good because I really needed very, very simple Dharma talks when I was young. And he used to I mean, it is a commonly held story, it's not that it was his personal invention. But he'd say, oh, there are 3 kinds of mind. One is a mind like something written in stone. One is a mind that's like something written in sand. So stone, it will go away maybe, but long time, right, held in the mind. The one that's like sand, it will hold the shape of that insult for some time, but working on it, it will go away. The mind's like water, beautifully giving up any attachment to the perception of, you know, irritability, giving up. And that's a very beautiful metaphor to contemplate. So you bring to mind that person in their crazy driving. I so let go of it. It so did not make any impression. I didn't revisit it. It didn't cling. I didn't cling into that. And you contemplate, this is, you know, my little humble experience of the mind like water. Now, what is it? Nobody's taking notes, otherwise I would have all these little list of things. So we talked about mindfulness so far. Now, the mind like water. When you bring that to, when you hold that in your awareness, you'll be able to observe and understand things about its nature. It's peaceful. It's liberating. Serene. So those are mental states that will prosper by you giving attention to them. The serenity of letting go. The serenity of not bearing ill will. The joy, and there's a sense of deep satisfaction to allow things to be finished. Oh, lovely. So there's mindfulness, and in terms of recollecting. You think it's all just about letting go, letting go. I mean, like if I talk about this, just letting go, letting go. But this mindfulness in recollecting, it really is recollecting. It's a kind of, it's not a deluded or afflicted attachment, but you want to collect it so that you prosper with the practice of daily life. Okay. And then I'm talking about what's letting go of, that you don't build up a perception and proliferation, that kind of letting go. Joy. And you, within that joy, you find a serenity and a stability of mind. If you were really keen and you can hold this kind of mental state with energy, with your mindfulness, you'll find that serenity, peacefulness, satisfaction. You'll see also in those mental states that that joy, I mean, even though I'm talking about the serenity side, that joy also is very energizing. And then you're able to discern within that, that you're able to see the Dharma really working. Then you have faith, confidence, conviction, a sense of resolve, and thrill. I am so excited about my Dharma practice. I have the kind of zeal and enthusiasm, like looking forward to having good things and using good things. You know, I'm talking about all like the five controlling faculties and seven factors of enlightenment. These are all, you're engaging them right here with just this kind of contemplation. Mindfulness, investigation of Dharma states, energy, rapture, serenity. And then it will lead to concentration and direct perception, insight, understanding. So don't underestimate the power of reviewing your mental conduct, if I can say it in that kind of funny way, but it's like your mental actions, your mental behaviors. Okay, so I've used this example, which one was very successful to begin with, and you all, just to make sure that you get my point and you don't just think that I'm talking about successful moments of practice, let me take one which appears to be total failure. Supposing somebody has left dishes in the sink. And it is a real sore point with you. And as soon as you see those dishes, the whole story in your mind about resentment arises full. And you have really bit the bait. And you know this. So, okay, you've got full afflictive emotion that's got a grip on you. So if you acknowledge that, that's the beginning of weakening its power. And like I ended the guided meditation with this, well, I don't know whether it's challenging or whether it's sweetie pie talking, but that you have got this idea that it's only working if you get rid of the troublesome mental states, and this is a wrong idea of practice. So it's the same kind of thing. You see those foul, offensive plates. You feel something in your body, and your mind hardens, and you really feel like Cinderella. It's terrible. Okay, so then you know this is just a story that I'm telling myself. So, okay, there's this moment of recognition. So this is what you're going to be able to dedicate and to collect up. your moment of recognition. I see this is what it's like in the body. Body goes tense and hard. That's a good place to start. And that's not insignificant. Even if you feel that your antidotes are not powerful, you're still training in those antidotes. So you see, this is the body of resentment. I can feel like all sinews drawing up into the center, powerful. You know, because the body of anger is one which is contracted and forceful. So you get the characteristics of it. Right? So this is beautiful. This means you're turning toward that dharma to investigate that dharma. It's an unwholesome dharma. I'm sorry, you can't be picky and choosing. You are not enlightened yet. You have to endure these deluded, afflictive mental states until you really understand and get to the bottom of it. Okay. So the body of resentment is like this. And then you also may be aware how it impacts the mind. You may be aware of the moment of its arising. I mean, that would be a great mitzvah if you were, but sometimes it happens. But even if you see it arising, it doesn't guarantee that you'll be able to...
stop.
Yeah, that's right, dispel it. See, even my friend Tony is saying stop it, but I like to say dispel, right? A little bit more nuanced, pointing you in the right direction. I have to be very careful with the words, right? Because this is the... how the instruction comes is by word choice. So you see it arising, but still you can't dispel it. And then you see that it comes again. So what is it? Then you're observing, this is me being very attached to this mental state. So that's also very wholesome dharma. You're recognizing attachment for what attachment is. This is fabulous. And you're going to be able to know the nature of what is attachment. You're going to be able to explore attachment. You're going to be able to see how attachment is structured. You're going to be able to see all the moving parts of attachment. This is so meaningful. This is great. And even I get excited just talking about it. You know, because to engage with very strong mental states, it takes a kind of vigor. And a thrill, it comes, right? Rapture will come with engaging very profitably and skillfully with very dynamic, difficult mental states. Don't be afraid. It's very energizing. So there you are. You're noting it. This is me being completely absorbed and believing in and identified with this. And then you see the story comes up again. I shouldn't have to experience this. This person is so wronging me. Who can set this right? How can I get this person to change their habits? I so feel so oppressed by these plates in this roommate. Okay, so then you're taking a picture of this. This is, you're taking strong perception. This is the proliferation in resentment. There's a story. There is a story. And this is that story. You know, like if I said we were going to say, tell Little Red Riding Hood, you know that story. It starts like this, and it goes like that, and it ends like this. Well, so this is the resentment story, and you know this story. And I tell you, you know, I have to say personally, I really so enjoy intricate Buddhist philosophy. It's like, it's how my neighbors love to go to the symphony. I love Buddhist philosophy. But if I got to tell you that some of the greatest dharma I got was really, really simple. I had the great chance to meet Deepa Ma in two of her three trips to America. And I got to sit at the three-month course with her. She was so sublime and so innocent. Oh, she was great. And there were a whole pile of us women who just kind of made a huddle around her, talking to her about compulsive overeating. And we had really to work hard to explain to her. She keeps asking, you eat more than what you want? You're not hungry and you keep eating? And you're like, yes, that is the problem. And she came out with this simple, like, you know, like, it's like it's like a tool, the magic tool. It's like you've got a key that will open every door. Or you've got your Swiss Army knife that can, you know, it's a screwdriver, it's a saw, it's a, you know, it's a jack for changing the car tires. You know, everything. You've got one tool that will do for everything. Okay. So you take a look at, now back to the Cinderella story about the dirty dishes. You take a look there. This is what Deepama said to us. She said, oh, when you find yourself doing these things, you have to say, I know you. I know you. So you get out your sword of wisdom with your labeling, and you're going to point right into that Cinderella story. I know you. I know you. And you are, and actually you're pointing like that is just to steady the mind, to be able to observe it more and more. Because you feel a little like crowded by your personal story. It's extremely claustrophobic. You feel very not, you know, confused and not being able to find your way out, but you're so invested in the story. So this is going to give you some way, like, you know, anyway, like you get the chair and make the lion step back 2 or 3 paces. So you get it, so that you have a little space between you and your personal drama at its peak, right? And you keep working with it, and you keep working with it. And maybe you, the heavens open, and you have, you know, direct perception of emptiness or something grand like that. Or maybe you just decide you're going to take a walk, that you're like, now you're very tired of this, and you've really been watching it, and you've got to do something that's very energetic now to move, shift the energy. You have many antidote options. It doesn't all have to be the most refined. Okay. And maybe it goes away slowly, maybe it keeps coming back a little bit, but not so strong. Or even maybe you're doing your best, but you are really, really attached to this, and you know it's stupid. And you know it's really just a story, and it's not doing you any good, but still you are so can't find the way out of it. Okay, so now first we had the story about the car and that there's no impression that's left. Now I've painted a story in which you really are suffering and you're really experiencing all the misery of your own delusion. So it's a different kind of story. And you're going to think, right, you're going to think, oh, there's no pennies in that. But not. There are. It's full of pennies, maybe more. So you have many moments in this in which the end of the day, you bring back to mind your pity party and you think, yeah, it's true. Oh, I had a really pissy time there. So that's one thing. Mindfulness connects you with a kind of rectitude and transparent self-honesty. That is $1 million dharma. So you got to collect it and acknowledge it. Yes, so I applied mindfulness. I was able, in the very least, to acknowledge this is the miserable me. Right, so I was able to acknowledge that. Now you take a really good appreciation moment of that dharma of coming face to face and investigating, being willing to experience in order to understand your own misery. A very valuable dharma. So you acknowledge. You appreciate that. Really infuse that with a lot of appreciation. And whatever you can bring back to your mind of your engagement with that mental state, and not just letting it to bulldoze you. Even if you're, like I always have got to go back and say, even if your antidotes were very extremely weak, and probably more so if they're very, very weak, at least you're able to identify, I applied this, I tried to work with it, I came at it again in this way. I decided then to completely change the environment and the energy, go for a walk, have a shower, something. I decided, and then I got over it. So you hold that whole thing in view with a sense of appreciating. These are the real authentic moving parts of a Dharma practice. Because a Dharma practice is from all of your conscious moments, from the time that you wake up until you're in deep sleep. All of your conscious moments are part, all of your volitions and your decisions, the mental states that arise, it's all, the composite is all your Dharma practice. Okay. So now this is the first part of what I wanted to point out. Collecting skillful dharmas, identifying skillful dharmas, acknowledging them, giving attention to them. What you give attention to, it grows in your consciousness, right? So you're using it profitably. Now you can dedicate. This is the second thing. Based on this mental event, based on this moment of practice, right, and then I've given you two categories. The kind which went very well from the beginning, based on this practice. And then I gave you the example of the one which is the full-on disaster, in which you're doing your best, but it's not so easy. Based on this practice, now you dedicate. And you think, what are my aspirations in this life? Good to visit what your aspirations are very, very often. Maybe your aspiration is very tentative and very humble, like, I just want to have better moods. That's reasonable. I'm not, you know, I'm not sniffing or looking down on that at all. Everybody wants better moods for the whole length of their Dharma practice, right? Okay, so maybe you dedicate. Based on this moment of not getting excited or upset about the car moment, may I not take things personally? May that kind of thing happen more and more? May I spontaneously release the tension in my psyche of things that normally I would take umbrage or offense? It's also, I didn't go into any kind of desire motifs, but you can fill in the blanks, you know, according to your wish. I'm just, right now, I have time only to talk about ones that were negative, right? So that's the very humble one. I just want to feel better. So please, based on this moment, I dedicate this moment of practice, that more and more moments of this kind of practice arise for me, that I feel better. So this is very humble and very reasonable. Especially if you feel very intimidated by your mishigas, you know, your like drama. Okay, or then if we've got the Cinderella story, you bring to mind. And maybe it's even a little touchy that if you even think about it, you start to like feel like, I shouldn't have to look at dishes. But you're like, oh, like quickly trying to override that to give more attention to the practice side. Like, because you still are feeling very not so sure that you're beyond the pale there. You're beyond the reach of this delusion. So you take this based on my engaging willingly and actively and somewhat successfully, somewhat not successfully, but still based on my engaging with this, may I have better moods. May I gain more skill with this kind of mental state, this kind of problem. May I prosper in Dharma practice. Okay, so this is a modest level of dedication. One of the benefits that comes to people who have verified practice, deep practice, is that you have more bold and daring dedications because you have more sense of vision about the potential of your Dharma practice. So, you have this moment of having a mind like water, you're not taking the driving seriously. You have this moment of working for a long time with difficult mental state, and okay, same kind of thing. You bring these to mind based on this practice. especially, I mean, I keep going back to this, especially if you were really dragged around and you feel miserable, all the more that you should dedicate it. Based on my willingness to engage with this, may the tools of the practice arise. May I bring them to their ultimate fulfillment and culmination. Based on this kind of practice, may I completely uproot all of the tendency toward delusion, drama, defilement in my mind. See, if you're a beginning practitioner, you don't have that kind of sense of perspective or vision or power or potential to practice. So then you've got to be contented with just the very proximate kind of goals and aspirations. But as practice matures, you begin to see the tremendous potential in even very small and weak, wholesome dharmas. So you get a bigger return, actually. Like, and you will relate to this because you, and I just, like, maybe you can relate to this, maybe you think it's all so too grand for you, oh, completely uprooting defilement, is that real? Oh. But you imagine, you think back to your first day of school. I bet everybody remembers their first day of school. Is there anybody here who can't remember the first day of school? Really? Oh, I feel so shocked. Wow, it's like the beginning of your whole adult life happens when you go first day of school. Oh, yeah, anyway. Because when you go to school, it's all like, it's all happening. Everybody's sitting and paying attention. You're learning, and you know based on learning, you're going to control this world. And then there's a blackboard, and the teacher draws the circles and the straight lines. The first word that we had to learn how to spell was doll. In my dying moment, still, I think that was a great victory. Anyway, so what is all, what if you break doll apart, it's just the circles. We had to do so many circles, pages and pages of circles, pages and pages of straight lines. Little did I know when I was 6 years old that I would learn 4 different language scripts. Burmese, a lot of circles. Thai, circles and straight lines. Tibetan, a lot of straight lines. Sanskrit, you know, Devanagari, you've got everything happening in that one. So anyway, I'm only just now I'm remembering. Oh God, that was the only the beginning was the first day of school. So anyway, you come back with your pieces of paper, all of those lopsided and wiggly, tentative, round circles, and you show it to Mom. And your mother feels great. Wow, what my daughter can do. Soon she's going to be in the driver's seat of big corporations, signing paychecks. She's going to be a rich girl. Why? You think that that's unreasonable? What do you think? Steve Jobs went to school, first day of school. Round circles and straight lines, and look what it led to. iPhones and iPads, now a biography, and like this. It started with very simple things, right? So if you, so, and from the point of view of the mother can see that this is how the world really does go, very realistically. You can do the basic building blocks. You're learning in a very systematic way. You will definitely get it. But from the point of view of the child, it's all very lopsided. It's not very round. The straight ones are at an angle. There isn't really very much control of this big, fat pencil. We have to have big, fat pencils. And then the grown-up kids are in the fourth grade. They had the little, skinny, normal pencils. Oh, I'm so envied them. So when I tell you those simple dharmas of coming face-to-face with your object, your difficult mental state, your difficult perception, the feeling tone, anything, you come face-to-face, just even the simple recognition, I'm completely flooded. And I have no sense of perspective. Even that much is the very realistic, authentic engagement with Dharma practice that will definitely, if you keep culturing it, it will lead to total liberation, eradication of all those defilements. But it's only the really mature practitioners who have that kind of confidence. In the beginning, you're like, your point of view is like the little school child who only sees it's not working well. I don't feel satisfied. It doesn't look nice. Anyway, different points of view, isn't it? If you all have any questions, comments, we have 10 more minutes before I have to let you go. Yeah, tell me your name.
Kempton.
Why is it hard? It's so hard to accept the circles that aren't perfect and the lines that are at an angle, even after so much practice.
Because the feeling, you feel discombobulated. It's hard to bear that. Yeah, tell me your name.
Anna. Thank you so much. I was having one of those days today. I lost my jacket yesterday. I left that jacket. I knew I wasn't going to get it back. So I appreciate you talking about what you did. Because I just felt all day, every time I kept thinking about that jacket and wanted it back, I kept saying, well, maybe somebody who really needed it found it. Maybe it was okay for me not to have it anymore. And it was, so I'm going to collect those pennies tonight.
Good. Loss is a very purifying pain to experience. That's right, Tony is really nodding. He lost his mother this week. If you practice with little losses, with dedication and sincerity, you will really be able to ride the waves with big losses. So again, I'd say don't underestimate the power of small losses. Tell me your name.
Mary.
So often, you know, it's talked about the benefit of practicing when painful feelings are present. Would you talk a little bit about the benefits of practicing when, you know, you feel good, when you don't feel like it?
Sure. Yeah, that's another whole essay question. It's a beautiful practice, though. It's always easier to talk about the negative ones first because there's higher motivation to work with the negative emotions because there's so much consequence of antisocialness, like to losing your temper and stuff like that. So there's a lot of motivation to work with negative ones because they're so painful. Positive ones takes a lot more mature motivation. So that in and of itself is a whole field of exploration, why the motivation is so weak for pleasure, to be objective and to investigate pleasure. It's really very interesting to see why that is. But there are times in which, in a day one after another, very beautiful, pleasant thing happens, and that you feel really delighted, gratified, and fulfilled, then your way of dedicating that is you spread it out. Just as I wish to be happy and enjoy happy things that are delightful and sweet, so may this person, that person, another person, another person, so may they also, all beings, enjoy delight, pleasure, the ripening of wholesome karmas is happiness. Happy things in samsara. You know, it's like when I'm saying just to want better moods is not to be looked down on. To see that happy experience is its own kind of potential, and that kind of happiness, we wish it for all beings. To really exercise your mind in that kind of dedication, that really strengthens the metta practice tremendously. That begins to touch on all kinds of very interesting practices to practice that perception of connectedness and relatedness, to practice noticing beings. It was very interesting with this car thing today to see the face of the driver in regret, and I mean, it wasn't anguish because nothing happened, but it would have been for real. But that regret, her pain on her face. Who would bear it against her then? And there's a lot of what psychologists say about road rage, for example, is that you can't see the face of the driver, so there's something very impersonal. Like, you have all kinds of goofy pedestrians. If they make eye contact with the driver, then there's a lot of forgiveness. But with other drivers, you're not connecting with their sense of humanity. So the practice of noticing beings, the practice of holding them dear, then there's a practice of sharing that delight. So I've taken this into a little bit of a different angle than... But anyway, it is like that. You can. There's a lot of diversification. Otherwise, you can keep with the same kind of formula based on the bliss of not being attached to gratification. That's good practice. May I course in blissful experience without getting caught and confused. I have to think about that one, huh? So then, let's close. Take your meditation postures for just one moment, and we'll dedicate right now. So you all made an effort to come and to be here. You were looking forward to any kind of thing, the happiness of meditating with your group, curiosity, what may a visiting teacher offer. You had to make the decision and keep making the decision to come and connect with your Dharma practice and push all kinds of things aside. Do value that. Do value that and don't underestimate that. That is a very powerful Dharma, because the ones who hear a lot of Dharma have a lot of Dharma to contemplate. And they have a great richness of antidotes to apply and motivation. So appreciate the things that you do for your own well-being. It's very intuitive wisdom that you are able to identify what is actually for your benefit. And based on your Dharma practice, I wish this for you, that you may also be a refuge to all the beings that come in contact with you, that you may be a source of comfort, support, inspiration to steady the ones of unsteady mind. May your Dharma practice bless you with utter fulfillment. Thank you.